Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber Podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today we are talking from Gaza to Mars. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, who I wish someone would shoot him off in a rocket, but nonetheless, Martin.
I'd take the chance to go. I would. It's the one thing, if you said to me, here, look, climb aboard this spaceship, you're going to travel for the rest of your life, don't know where you're going to end up. Oh, I'd be all on for it.
It would be actually bliss for you and bliss for me.
As long as I have Wi-Fi, just as long as they give me Wi-Fi.
I don't know if 5G works in space. we actually have the man who might know the answer to the question. We are delighted, and I say this genuinely delighted, to speak to Luai Elbasuni from Senior Director of Engineering in NASA's Mars Ingenuity Helicopter Project. Luai, this is a real pleasure. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us, and thanks for getting up early to talk to us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
What's it like, first of all, to have seen the work that you put in be so received so well? Because it's just a brilliant story to actually fly a helicopter on another planet. It's not, I think you described it as, we started from Mission Impossible and we went from there.
I mean, the idea of flying on Mars is, it's beyond imagination. I mean, anybody understand? I mean, if you understand the physics and the environment on Mars, you know, like, it's basically impossible to fly, just because there is no air. I mean, you need air to fly, like a helicopter. I mean, the air about 1% of Earth, so that created a lot of difficulties. I mean, early on, the ideas came on. Probably back in late 90s, and I think like then they came back to the company I was working with in 2012 and, 2013. That's when, I started working with that company and basically brainstorming around the idea. And, they wanted us to build some helicopter for them. So, it's a really difficult mission. I mean, even until the moment it flew, I mean, I was like, I had a little bit of fear. I don't want to say hesitation, that, if one of the assumptions we made wasn't right, probably wouldn't have flown.
I did go and look at the video, and I've never seen a smile. Well, you've got that smile on your face now, but that smile of yours when it worked was extraordinary to see that, just watching it and going, it's done it. Like, as you said, flying on another planet. I'm right in saying that if I decided that I wanted to fly right, I got to tell it now and it might do it in 30 minutes time.
Yeah, I mean, it's like actually take a little bit longer time because you got to download the flight, program the flight hours ahead of time. I mean, take about 39 minutes to get there. But in reality, that's just only to get a little bit of data. So, I mean, to download a lot of data, it's going to take a lot longer. So they usually load it at least 6 hours before.
Okay.
And it take about 4 hours for all the data to come back, after a flight happened. So, I mean.
How big is your team? Is it a massive big team?
So, I mean, our team, we developed the helicopter was in the beginning was not that big. I mean, it kept growing. But on the NASA side, they were a really big team. I mean, because there's a testing validation, there's the flight control team. There are different teams, but my team, maybe the biggest it was 10, 12 people. I mean, the helicopter team, the people who design stuff, they probably less than 30, 20 people.
And I suppose they're from all over the world. Your team comes from all over the world.
Yes. I mean, there is people, most people on my in my side of the team a lot of them actually were from the U.S. I mean there was other people remember some people from Vietnam, there was other people people the project lead on JPL side, I think she's from Guam. The chief engineer at JPL NASA side is also he's from India. And then there's a lot of other engineers from all over the world.
I saw you interviewed by an engineer about it, and it was like watching two and forgive me, but it was like watching two nerds absolutely have a nerd fest. Everybody was delighted. It was so and how did you make that battery lighter? And you were able to talk about the motor and how you had to problem solve. It is fascinating to the amount of, as you said, the problem solving for something that has to fly somewhere that has no atmosphere. How long were you working on this project?
I mean, it's probably like late 2013, you know, 2014, all the way to like mid 2018. It was all quite a bit of time. I mean, I worked in the design phase, so.
It puts me to shame. I'm 20 years doing something and I haven't got it finished. And you started in 2013 and you've already flown on Mars. I mean,
going to pause the podcast for a quick update. Rattle of bucket. This podcast, for example, with Luai was recorded a couple of weeks ago prior to events in Palestine and Gaza and Israel. And it was arranged purely by our connection previously with Hannah Salah, our good friend in Gaza, who put us in contact. And it's been out on Patreon since the moment it was recorded, and we continue to do that. We have to do that because if we don't give additional content, we don't have supporters. Because while there are thousands of you listening to the podcasts on as regular updates, whether it be on housing, it be on health, it be on education, it be on across the network, I mean, the stuff on trauma, the policing podcast, the Glow West, all of these things. There are thousands of you listening, but there are far, far, far a tiny fraction of people who are actually supporting. And I'm very grateful for everyone who does. But the opportunity cost, the amount of time, effort and money that goes into this just means that it needs to be supported. If you are one of those who are listening to this now and you're thinking, I don't want to see this go away, well, please head to patreon.com/tortoiseshack. There's a range of options from $2.50 as a tip jar, but you know, from £6, you're getting everything in terms of the additional content. You're getting access to all of the other podcasts that we do, that stay behind the paywall. I'd love for loads of you to join, but I'd appreciate every one of you who does. I know it's not easy out there right now, and I appreciate that, but we do need the support. It's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Go back to the podcast and listen to this amazing story of an amazing man.
It puts me to shame. I'm 20 years doing something and I haven't got it finished. And you started in 2013 and you've already flown on Mars. I mean, it's a really short space of time to do something. I know it sounds long, but it's not for what you did. It's a very short space of time.
Sorry, I do want to broaden the conversation, because as you listeners will know, a regular contributor on the podcast is Hannah Salah in Gaza, and you are a proud Palestinian, you're a proud man of Gaza. And can I just ask you, you know, like your father was a surgeon. Growing up, education must have been really important in your family.
Yeah, you know, like we used to say something, Palestinian invests in two things, are education and building houses.
I love that.
The only thing we reinvested. So my dad always wanted us, like he wanted all of us to be doctors. I mean, like, you know, I guess he failed in that mission. I mean, he ended up with one doctor and three engineers. But I think we've seen him work so hard as a surgeon. I mean, being a surgeon in Gaza, I mean, he was in the surgical room, like, you know, you're working on injured people all the time. I mean, saving lives. And, you know, I mean, a lot of time we didn't get to see him. He was working double jobs. And so it's like, it wasn't easy. So, I mean, maybe that kind of maybe scared me away from being a doctor. You know, I mean, I like to be outdoors. I like to do other things.
And how long has it been since you were back in Gaza?
So last time I went to visit. I lived Gaza in 98, you know, and after a year and a half, I went and visited. I was there for, you know, a month. So I was here 2000. And since 2000, that's when the second uprising started, the second Intifada. And after that, like, you know, things just kept getting more difficult and difficult. And, you know, with the blockade and the siege and stuff, it's like it's been really kind of near impossible, if it's not impossible, to get in. Even if you're able to find a way to get in, we could not even get out. So I mean, I like kind of haven't been there for quite a bit of time.
that's, I mean, and listeners, I'm sure it's not lost when you say, we started this conversation saying it's, you started to get a helicopter to fly on Mars and started thinking that was Mission Impossible, and you have achieved that and you haven't been able to go home.
Yeah, I mean, it's really difficult. I mean, that we had, like, my parents had to leave Gaza so we can see them without, like, risking, like, our career and our lives and stuff like that. So, and, you know, so in 2012, my parents moved to Germany after my dad retired from Gaza. And, yeah, so, I mean, we've been seeing them more often since, but, I mean, I don't really see anybody in my extended family. But at least, like, you don't get to see our parents.
You referred to the Second Intifada, and actually, at that stage, you were a student in the US, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And there was also your parents' land was bulldozed. This is the reality that the Israeli forces bulldozed the land, and that must have meant for you very great difficulty in terms of, you know, your continuing your education and your studies.
Yeah, I mean. United States is a very expensive country. So, I mean, like, there's a lot of time. I mean, since my first day in the United States, I mean, I had to work. I mean, you know, double jobs. I mean, I had to, like, you know, I was working like 80, 90 hours, 100 hour weeks, you know, and then, like, and my dad used to help me with the tuition, which I still had to work during the time. But in 2000, my dad, like, was not able to, 2001, he was not able to send me anymore to help me out with anything. So I had to, like, you know, and honestly, like, you know, you have to pay like $6,000-$7,000 tuition a semester. I mean, it's kind of really, you know, it's really hard. I had to drop out, you know.
You had to drop out?
Yes, I dropped out of school for 2001 to 2002. I was out of school.
Wow, I didn't know that, and it just shows. But, like, we spoke to the debt collective on this podcast for that are putting the pressure on President Joe Biden to drop the student debt. I'm assuming you'd agree with that proposal to, you know, make university not you don't leave university with $30,000 worth of debt would be a good thing. Yes.
Oh, I mean, you know, that's a completely different subject. I mean, I didn't really get any student loan because I wouldn't qualify since I wasn't a U.S. citizen at the time. So, I mean, I had to do it the hard way. I think university tuition should be reduced. I mean, honestly, I think we should focus on the problem more than focusing about, because, like, even if we dropped debt, you know, I think, like there's still a big problem. In U.S., United States tuitions are insanely expensive. Mm. And they go up about 12% a year. I mean, you know, like, I don't think any university, I have friends who have student debt, like, exceed $200,000, $300,000, which is basically, I think, is a slave contract. You know, I think they need to, like, literally figure out a way to make tuition more expensive. I think that student loans actually create the problem, because allowing people who are, like not, you know, like, in a way, irresponsible because they're young, to take so much loans to pay such expensive tuition as to keep allowing this tuition to go up. So, I mean, I definitely ask for ways to forgive, you know, student loan, at least forgive the interest, because some of these interest rates are insanely high. So you can buy a house with 3% interest, but the student loan got, like, some of them like 9% interest, which is really insane, or even higher.
Can I ask a question? You said your brothers all followed your dad into the medical.
You said three engineers and one doctor.
Oh, sorry, it was three engineers. Are the engineers looked on as a disappointment? You know, is it that you may have flown on Mars, but, you know, you haven't done anything great in medical circles?
I don't know. I mean, actually, two of my electro engineer brother, one of them ran his own business and another one actually worked in TV, so in press. So they really have not even used their engineering degrees. So, I don't know. I mean, like, my dad have very high standards, you know. I mean, I'm sure, you know, he's still not very happy with me.
your dad, you say to your dad, I'm after flying a helicopter on Mars. And your dad says, yeah, well, tell me what it's like when you're in, as you said, in the surgery and something, and there are real crises and emergencies in front of you. So, yeah, I kind of sympathize, you know. It's a different, but do you think you get a lot of that from your family, that drive? Because that is like your story as an individual. You do understand how proud Gaza is of you. You must get that. They really are proud of you. The people we speak to in Gaza, it's a really big deal. They think what you've achieved is a testimony, and it gives them a lot to talk about, you know?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, my dad actually he just really want me to have kids, you know?
Yeah.
That is the biggest achievement. So, you know, I think he doesn't really like, you know, I probably said very successful in my career, but it's like, you know,
he just wants grandkids.
Elvis, old school, but, you know, he's like, want me to have a lot of kids.
Yeah, he just wants grandkids, I suppose. I suppose that's it. Yeah.
Yes,
you're 20 years in the US now. So you've clearly made your life in the US. How much do you think about home and the situation there?
I mean, I think about it quite a bit. I mean, I've been in the US 23 years. You know, I follow up with a lot of things that happen. I mean, I think what's happening is not really right. I mean, I think humans everywhere deserve equal rights. So I don't know. It's like Palestine is a really difficult place. I mean, it's people have a lot of difficulties. There's a lot of injustices.
Yeah. Can I ask, after the helicopter, I mean, that's a massive project. As you said, you were flying only yesterday. I mean, to think that you were flying on Mars only yesterday, but what's the next big project for you? I mean, how do you top flying a helicopter on Mars from Earth?
I mean, so since I was young, I always wanted to start my own company. So, I mean, I studied engineering just to, you know, understand the field I want to work on, because I want to start something that actually leave a footprint on Earth, you know, like, you know, solve problems that we have, you know, like working something with alternative energy, alternative mode of transportation. And, you know, I mean, similar to the stuff we use in Mars, I mean, honestly, I'm working on starting a company in that field. So, I mean, that's really what's, I think, what's next. I mean, yes, you can enter, get into history books and, you know, be part of the team to fly on another planet. But honestly, I mean, it's great. I mean, I have so much pride in that. But at the same time, it's like, I always wanted to do something that actually have an impact on everyday human life.
Like a successful Elon Musk.
I'm up on a challenge with him, you know. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I could see that you would. I could absolutely see that you would.
Lou, I'm actually interested in this, though, in terms of the types of technology that you're interested in for changing, for making benefits to mankind. Are there certain areas that you are interested in, like specifically in the engineering sphere?
Yeah, I mean, most of my experience, I worked on electric cars and, you know, electric airplanes. I am specialized in electric propulsion, which is a different way to, like, create, you know, like, basically, like, other than using combustion engine and other things. So, like, I'm interested in all the areas that you could do that, and including, like, other things, like, with alternative energy, like solar, wind, things. So I mean, that's the area I'm going to be I'm going to be focused on.
I think there's a million to be made in that easily. I easily think
a million. You don't get anything for less than a lot more than a million these days. Just in terms of backers, where if you don't mind me asking, though, just again, as I said, in terms of your own story, this is, you've said you'll be in the history books as the man who helped do this. Absolutely, you will. But it's kind of clear that's not the end of what you want to do. Do you feel that in terms of our journey to Mars and all of that, does all of this, you know, obviously you must have a passion for that as well. Do you feel that space exploration is something that we are going to see more of in the coming years? Because it has started to get more interesting. Martin mentioned Elon Musk. He's flying his own. He's flying his own SpaceX shuttles. So, are we going to see more of a space age that we haven't seen in decades?
I think there is a race to it right now. I think I would see a lot more space flight around Earth. I mean, you know, for probably tourism reason. I think that's kind of exciting. I think there will be an attempt to go to Mars. I mean, we still and have to figure out a way how to get back from Mars. I mean, we're going to learn a lot from, like, sending human to Mars in terms of, like, survivability of the humans on Mars. And the effect of such a long trip in space. I think we see a lot of these things. I think we see a lot more missions to the moon. We could see, like, you know, even some stations on the moon. But, you know, I mean, I think that's kind of what's in the future. I mean, there's a lot of space mining and things like that. But,
and you're young enough to actually go to the moon or to Mars. Would you ever consider something like that yourself? I mean, there's nothing like seeing your helicopter fly in real time from Mars.
I don't know. By the time I get to Mars, if I assume I go, I don't think the helicopter will be out of commission. But, but you know, it's like, I mean, possibly. I mean, like, once, like, flight gets safer, I really love our planet. I love Earth. I mean, we have a very unique planet. I don't think, in my personal opinion, I don't think we have found anything near it. I mean, even the thing they say is closer to Earth. I mean, I don't think anything have our atmosphere. I don't think anything have our life, have our beauty. So, I mean, that's why, like, I think we should protect our Earth. I mean, learning about space has kind of taught me that. I mean, you know, like, being on the surface of Mars, you're subjected to so much radiation because you don't have the outer atmosphere and all the radiation belt to protect you from actually the space radiation. So you're basically sitting in a place like, you know, you're inside of an X-ray machine.
Yeah. I watch too much. What's the series? The Apple for All Mankind, and I'm learning all of these things about the radiation now.
And honestly, this was one of the most thing like was surprising to me, and like one of the first thing I learned when I started working on the Mars helicopter, because I worked on a lot of electronic for Earth, and I was like, you know, you start discovering, it's like, oh wow, electronics, like, you know, like if you send an iPhone to Mars, it wouldn't even work. You know, I mean,
well, that's why Martin can't go now.
Yeah, even like if you like warm it up, put it in a warm box. I mean, it's like, even if it worked, probably would not work for that long of a period of time, you know.
And how is communications with the helicopter? I mean, is that all very, very difficult because of the distance?
Oh, yeah. So they have what they call the Deep Space Network, which is a really complex system that utilizes several different satellites on Earth stations, and actually also have couple satellites all around Mars, you know, and then it's like a talk to the rover, and then the rover talk to the helicopter. So there's kind of a lot of playing around, and, you know, I mean, it take quite a bit of time. So there's really basically nothing is really real time. All the flight pre-programmed, you know, autonomous, you know, flights. But,
just, I suppose I'm aware that we got you out of bed early to have this conversation, but I do want to just go back to the idea of, you know, your journey as an individual. Do you get the inspiration that you are, and have you heard much feedback from Gaza, from Palestine, and from the community that you were born in?
Yeah, I mean, I get a lot of feedback. I mean, everybody, my family, my extended family, my uncles, everybody's so proud. I mean, I think I'm becoming a national figure, you know. So it's like, I mean, I get people messaging me every day. I've already been doing a lot of talks, you know, the Minister of Education. I at the university, I'm getting a lot of invite, to talk and like inspire students. Like, see, I get messages, people ask me, what should I study, you know, I mean, I can do whatever I can, you know, try to like, to provide back as much as I can to everybody in Palestine.
And you were saying to us, it's been absolutely hectic for you, hectic the last few weeks. Have you anything planned for a little break, for a little getaway, for a rest for yourself? And does it involve flying helicopters?
You know, I'll tell you the truth, I just want to go surfing. I've been missing out on my surfing for the last 2-3 weeks. You know, it's like, it's from daily surfer, I'm becoming a weekly surfer, you know, so I definitely want to get back into that. Probably like, yeah, I wish the border is open. I'm a world traveler. I mean, I travel to other countries in the world. So I like to continue my world traveling mission.
Like to come to Ireland as well.
Yes. And I mean, that's I would love Ireland, you know.
We have a fabulous surfing beach called Rosnaula in County Donegal. It's used for championships and everything. It's a fab. Now, it's freezing. You need two wetsuits, but it is. I mean, the surf is just incredible.
Yeah, Ireland has always been in my top, you know, one of my top list. I just haven't really made it. I mean,
but, well, you can rest assured when the day comes, we'll spend some time and we'll break bread and have dinner, because I think we owe you for dragging you out of bed at this early hour on a Saturday morning.
I'll be down, you know.
Oh, and I have to say, you'd be treated like a hero if you came here. There is no doubt you would. From technical nerds and everybody else, you would be treated like a hero. Look, thank you so much for getting yourself out of bed. And we really, really appreciate that you have done this for us. We think you're a great success story. We understand why Gaza is holding you up there as a brilliant example of a person from Gaza. And we completely agree with them. Absolutely agree with them. Congratulations on everything you've done. And thank you so much for coming on to talk to us this morning.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Louis Albassoni, it was a pleasure. And again, lads, I would say also do go check out Hannah Salah's pieces. We keep tweeting them. You know, if the world doesn't pay attention, the human rights abuses will continue. Please, 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 please do your bit. And again, thank you for listening. We will be back to you all. Actually, back to you tomorrow. Talk to you all soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.